Where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Hello and welcome, Ducks fans, where and whenever you're watching or listening. This is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never before heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. I'm your host, Nick Cody. With me, as always, my co-host, Samuel Tidrick-Smith. And hopefully you're already following us on Twitter. This will be our bowl season episode right here during signing day week. And the end of last episode, I said I'd see you guys next week. Well, we didn't play in that Pac-12 championship, Sam. In fact, we lost our rivalry game, formerly known as the Civil War, to the Oregon State Beavers. Gotta tip the cap to them. We'll talk about that a little bit more in your in our lightning yellow round as we get some of the wrap-up of that game out of the way. But Sam, how have you been processing the loss so far in these past couple weeks?
Nick, I've been all right. Sometimes your rival gets you, and this was one of those occasions in which it happened. We'd been saying all season, Oregon State's on the rise, Oregon State's on the rise. That game is a very scary game, and it turned out to be. Absolutely was. It's never a great sign when you see a team lose a game in which the opponent only passed the ball 13 times. That usually means that they're kind of doing something consistently to you, and you can't stop it whatsoever, which was absolutely the story of that ball game. But the Oregon Ducks, they're on to the Holiday Bowl. Bigger and brighter things currently going on in the future to happen. Ducks moving on.
Yep, and hey, while it left a bad taste in our mouth for a little bit, it's it's not too much to linger on. It sucks losing in November twice to two different teams that are your rivals. But hey, the things that Lanning and this program are doing moving forward, which starts right here this week with signing a brand new class, the first under a full year coach Lanning, it's going to tell us a lot about the future and especially moving into this bowl game. But first and foremost, if you've been a part of the show, if you watch us before, you know we got to start it off here with a lightning yellow round. So I'm going to put 2 minutes on the clock. We're just going to get our thoughts and feelings out of the way. Anything about that Oregon State game, which you noted, and I'm going to start off. I'm going to say, man, Sam, I wish we could get the last quarter and a half of football back of the Oregon season and just try a do-over.
I wish Oregon could have just gotten like one timeout back, honestly. That probably would have been enough right there. But truthfully, the thing that I'll say about this game that sticks out the most to me, and I think will moving forward just because of the photographic memory of it, not mine, but the one that exists on the internet, it's always really terrible to lose that good looking of a color v color game.
Yeah. Oh, man, especially in this rivalry, you get those colors and they just don't go together whatsoever. But it's even worse when you give everyone in the student section one of those silly orange cowboy hats to make your team look like Oklahoma State even more. Oh, losing under those conditions with only 26,000 and it still being that loud. Tough, tough stuff.
Yeah, that's never the way you want to send off a lot of guys, especially guys that might not be playing in the game coming up. The Holiday Bowl, definitely not ideal. Oregon, they'll have some guys returning that maybe people didn't think would. But yeah, you definitely want some time back in that one. As you said, last quarter and a half would be a really ideal chunk of that game to get back.
Well, and especially as an offensive lineman, you got to start up front, man. Oregon State's offensive line closed out the game. They looked like monsters at the end. In fact, my one concern was our pass defense. And, I felt pretty confident that even against, this Oregon State team, we might have an advantage there because we knew Oregon State wouldn't have an easy time passing the football. No, instead, that actually led to our downfall even worse as they completely abandoned the passing game and just ran it down our throats. Meanwhile, our offensive line just didn't play the same way that they had all season, didn't cover guys up the same way, and Oregon State was the aggressor. One more for you, Sam, before we close out.
You know, it's probably the fact that Oregon State game exposed every major issue that Oregon football had been having this season, primarily the interior of that defensive line. We've been saying it over and over, this is a group that I step up. It's a group that I step up. Well, learned very clearly what happened when they didn't step up.
Yeah, and hey, it's the end of a regular season, one in which I think the outcome, something we could be pretty happy about, but how it played out and how we probably expected it as the season rolled along, pretty unexpected. I think looking back, there's a lot of things we could go back and, you know, hopefully influence, change, and progress. But one of the things that's already changed since our last episode is Coach Kenny Dillingham. He's out of here. He's on his way to coach his alma mater, Arizona State. They picked him up as the head coach. But we have Bo coming back for the bowl game. We've got a new offensive coordinator from University of Texas, San Antonio. The Roadrunners down there, and got to catch a little bit of their offense. I'm excited to see what he brings to the table. But this bowl game is going to be very unique. We're playing North Carolina down in the Holiday Bowl, one of my favorite, you know, non-major bowl games, because it's the first one I got to go attend in 2008 in Mike Bellotti's last game as head coach. But man, this is an exciting opponent, two exciting quarterbacks potentially in this game. Bo Nix coming back, and obviously a lot of turnover for this Oregon team. A lot of guys in the transfer portal, albeit a lot coming back in through the transfer portal or through recruiting. But unfortunately, those guys aren't going to be able to make an impact on the bowl game due to NCAA rules. So we basically have what we've got, a bunch of guys processing out, but the guys that are still sticking with this team and, you know, right now are traveling back home before they travel down to the bowl site to finish out bowl practices. You know, best of luck to him, man. I think the core of this team really, really excites me for the future. Albeit, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about the potential of Dante Moore coming in. Well, lo and behold, he's flipped to UCLA. Oregon has found a different quarterback in flipping the Baylor quarterback. But these kind of things, I think we're going to just have to get used to. Recruiting, transfers, all of these being such a year-to-year turnover that if you're an Oregon State team where you're only really processing one guy out who's a quarterback looking for a new opportunity, that's going to be a rarity in college football until you have consistency at your head coaching spot, just like they've had with Jonathan Smith. So, again, I like the core of what we have, and I think a lot of fans are really nervous, but we have to keep in mind this is Dan Lanning's first full season as head coach. There's going to be a lot of turnover, and he's going to be getting a lot of guys in that are more towards his style and what he envisions for Oregon football.
Well, I think the most telling thing that we learned, at least today, and I'll say today's Wednesday, I believe, what is the 21st, Nick? Wednesday the 21st, early national signing period opening today. We saw a lot of big things happening. Neither one of us, I think, would claim to be quote-unquote recruiting experts by any means. I don't think either of us want to be referred to as recruiting experts by any means necessarily. But the number one thing that stuck out to me, Dan Lanning addressed the major issue. We just said it in the last 5 minutes of this. The interior of Oregon's defensive line had been a major, major issue. It was one that they felt they had to deal with in the transfer portal last offseason. This season, they go aggressively after it in recruiting, pull in, I believe, four of the top 10 for sure, defensive linemen that were still available, still uncommitted, are now Oregon Ducks. It's a huge move, and what I love is that it shows that Dan Lanning is the type of guy that can recognize the flaws, recognize the issues, wants to address that, and not only wants to address it, it's not going to be an issue. It's, well, it was our plan to be able to go after X, Y, and Z and be able to get he went and got it done, and there wasn't a question about it.
Oh, man, and if you look at where the players are coming from, that's what I'm most excited about. When you're bringing in players from Alabama and Texas – and these really, you know, high-level programs that they've got stars on the roster, that's when you know that these guys have seen a high-level football. They know how to compete, and they're just looking for a shot. And we saw how well that can work out, plugging a guy like Christian Gonzalez this last year, man. Casey Rogers, some of those guys that just came in and were able to instantly have an impact because they were at a position of need. And I think we addressed a lot of those. You mentioned the interior defensive line, but especially with our ability to generate pass rush. I think we found a couple edge guys that could really, really help us out, especially, you know, five-star Mateo Uigalele. A lot of people know him from his brother DJ, currently trying to transfer out there from Clemson. But, man, just instantly addressing those in recruiting and getting some valuable transfer offensive linemen with experience, because of all the guys we're losing with all their many years and accumulated starts along the offensive line here this offseason, that's going to be a major thing if we want to keep Bo protected going into the 2023 season.
I think you're exactly right, and I think that we were able to see Lanning and his team be able to recognize that. The other thing they were able to do was they were able to quickly and preparedly fix a hole that they had. You had a guy in Moore who you expected to come be a part of this roster for as long as he did, right? And suddenly, at what feels like the 11th hour, that suddenly changes. Well, you have a backup plan in place, it turns out. You're able to go, you're able to get Austin Novosad, a guy who's been to all the Elite 11s, put up good numbers there, has gotten appreciation from a lot of different people, especially down in that area about that. He was going to go to Baylor, somebody that they had big hopes for. So being able to get a guy like that to come in, be able to fill that gap in this class. In each class, these coaches, they have circled the positions and the groups that they really want to fill and they really want to attack. And I think being able to bring in a quarterback that they really trusted was part of that. I think Novosad's going to be that guy. He fills that hole. But now also, you can look to the transfer portal as well, see if there's something you want to play with there too. It clearly worked out with Bo. I don't see the harm in going in there and saying, hey, okay, if you're all right sitting a year, because Bo's coming back, if you're okay sitting a year, 2024 is going to be a real battle.
Yeah, and you sit here and you look at, you know, both with the players going out and the players coming in and the potential for next year to be another big year for Bo Nix, and what will be important is keeping that consistency. Obviously, in the backfield, we'll have our returning leading rushers and a couple new weapons coming in. And then at the wide receiver spot, well, we'll still have Troy Franklin. But unfortunately, you know, losing wide receiver, you know, basically you're number two or three wide receiver, and, you know, Mataveo is a tight end going down to UCLA, you know, but I think one of the things that we're seeing is even with this turnover, it's even in the recruiting facet, it's next man up, that there's a plan in place that even though these are pretty young and relatively inexperienced coaches, especially with Lanning as the head man, they still have a backup plan, and you can tell that they've thought about this extensively for a multitude of scenarios. And yeah, I'm excited to see how this addresses specifically things that we've seen this season that we knew, especially by the Utah game, that we weren't going to be able to address this season, especially defensively. And in fact, we found ways to kind of work around it with not just the roster, but schematically things we were doing in games. And even, you know, against University of Washington, that second half there, we adjusted knowing our defense wouldn't be able to slow down Michael Penix Jr. So what did we do? We basically played bully ball the entire second half, and it almost worked until Bo Nix was hurt. So I don't know. I think the most important thing Ducks fans need to keep in mind is to have, you know, it's okay to have a little bit of speculation and not just be a yes man completely buying in all the time, but do have a little bit of faith. Know that, you know, the program is not going to crumble just because one 18 or 19 year old kid changes his mind in the last couple of days. That's just not how these things work. That's not how a team comes together, and it's not how it's built, and that's just not how the University of Oregon is or is going to be. So a lot of times people are going to blame these kind of things on NIL or kids being selfish or a whole multitude of silly reasons that people don't fully understand. But at the end of the day, if you're a Duck and you want to be a Duck, you'll come be a Duck. And once a Duck, always a Duck. Some people are going to stay. Some people it's going to be a great fit for. And others, it's not going to be the best fit. It's not going to be the best time. But regardless, man, all I know is I feel proud to be a Duck. I'm proud for whoever wants to come in and be a part of this program. And I just hope that the fans can get along and go with it, because sometimes you see the negativity, the instantaneous reaction, and you realize, oh yeah, it's going to be up to 9 months plus before we ever hear about what this kid is legitimately doing in the ones, twos, or even in the backups at practice. So something to keep in mind.
Well, Nick, we sit here and we can talk about the 17-year-olds all day long, the freshmen that are signing up. I'm really impressed with this, with the transfer portal right now. I think there's so many people who are all over it and covering it, but I think the work Oregon's been able to do, and it's been really impressive. And I mean, obviously, when you bring in a corner and a wide receiver from Alabama, you're going to turn heads immediately, for sure. But I love the work that Oregon's been doing specifically along the offensive line in the transfer portal, because it is a position that, number one, I think actually is beneficial to at least bring in some transfers through there, bring in those big guys that proven they can play, just can't get into a rotation somewhere or another. See if they can come work for you. It could work great. It worked awesome for a guy like Dallas Warmack when he came into Oregon, spent one season there, but that one season, a Rose Bowl. Fantastic work there. Oregon, they've brought in guys this way. They brought in a transfer from Texas, big get right there. Also, a guy out of Rhode Island, one of the best players at that division, at that level of college football. I think he was the third-ranked offensive lineman in the whole portal, now an Oregon Duck. Love seeing that kind of work done there. Love seeing what Dan Lanning has been able to find and been able to work with that's available right now. I think that college football, we recognize what the free agency is and what it's become. Use it to your advantage.
Exactly. And you said it, you're right on the point. I think the positions that take a couple years to develop, you can really benefit from getting a guy in the transfer portal. So that's, and we see it with inside linebacker too. That's a guy that, you know, you have to be able to not just think, but instantaneously react to what the offense is doing. And there's a lot of information there to process in the middle of the defense and in the back end of the defense. So I really do see where linebacker, inside linebacker, DB, and offensive line are places that I think you can automatically bring in guys that, even if they don't contribute as starters, just that veteran leadership and ability to offer a new perspective, different coaching points, those things can really help out at those positions, even if they don't end up ultimately working out.
Well, I think that's 100% correct, and I think that's exactly what Oregon has been able to take advantage of here. Obviously, you go through a season that ends 9-3, maybe not exactly what you wanted to, although I think if you go back to our first episode of the season, you take a look at things. I do believe that you and I both said, 9 wins sounds about fair. That could be about right. Now, would those 9 wins have come the way that we saw them turn out? Probably wouldn't have said it that way. But you see some things out of this Oregon team, and now that you're in this recruiting cycle, you're in this time frame right here before bowl practice becomes super locked in, and that's the only thing you're worried about. Continue to build the team that you have. Continue to fill the gaps that you need to. Oregon has done that. I've been excited to see how that's gone. Now, I'm excited to see what happens in the Holiday Bowl.
Yep, and the Holiday Bowl is a really a unique bowl. As I still remember, you get to do, you know, all bowls have some associated events, and you know, but being able to go down to San Diego, obviously one of the better locations you can go to for non-major bowl. But one of the things I enjoyed, and I hope they still do it, is you got to go for a banquet dinner on aboard one of the military crafts right there in the ocean, sitting there right on the ocean. And they had both teams come in back when we played Oklahoma State. I still remember seeing Dez Bryant, Zach Robinson over there represented, and speakers for their team. And I can't remember who it was for us, but I just remember that being Mike Bellotti's last bowl game. You know, the highlights from that game still stand out among Ducks fans. You know, Mazzoli getting the truck stick, LeGarrette jumping over people. And well, someone we're going to talk to pretty soon here had a couple big highlight plays themselves. But Sam, what do you remember from that old Holiday Bowl game?
Well, I can tell you what I remember from that ball game. I think that might have been one of, if not the first bowl game I remember specifically taking the time out to be able to catch it as an Oregon fan. I remember listening to that one with Jerry Allen call of that game, a game that Oregon did come out a little slow in. It was, I think, a 17-7 halftime score, but first drive out of the second half, immediately Walter Thurman, kickoff return all the way back to, I believe, inside the 10-yard line. Oregon scores quickly. Suddenly, Jeremiah Masoli's running through people. LeGarrette Blount's running over through people. You've got just everybody that could be doing something big in that game was doing something big in that game. It ended up being a really fun one. It's a part of why I'm wearing this jersey right here, because we know exactly what day it is, who we have joining us, everything involved with that.
Yes, sir. I remember three things specifically about that day. I remember the first half, Dez Bryant setting the record for receptions in the game, and thinking, dude, we need to get this guy out of here. Even though we had probably our best defensive back group of all time at Oregon, man, he made it tough. And if he hadn't gotten injured, might have gone a little bit different that day. Second thing I remember, going in either at halftime or maybe even before the game, and as a red shirt, not having my helmet on, not ready at all, they had the cannons in Qualcomm Stadium, like right there as you went up the tunnel, and your ears would be ringing for like a half minute or so in the locker room, especially if you had a helmet on, I imagine. So I was sitting there going, oh man, we're all the guys shuffling in the locker room at halftime. Oh man, that was miserable. But number three, and most important, because most people remember this one, the hit TJ Ward had on Zach Robinson. And that's why this week we had to have on TJ Ward as our very special guest. With us now, former Oregon defensive back and Super Bowl champion, TJ Ward. Now, TJ, you are one of my favorite Oregon Ducks, one of the guys we've wanted on this program for a long, long time, because my freshman year, we had one of the most unique teams that season, had to go through a lot of ups and downs, but we culminated that season with a Holiday Bowl, much like this 2022 season will. And in it, you had a highlight that I think most Duck fans will always remember you for, that hit on Zach Robinson that you could hear in the entire area of San Diego, especially on the TV screen. What's it like when you see that highlight play every now and then from Ducks fans today?
Oh, it's still probably the biggest hit of my career. I believe so. If not, it's definitely top two. But quick story about that hit is, you know, when I actually hit him, I didn't even realize I'd hit him that hard. I didn't even realize, like, the magnitude or the collision or anything. I think I had bumped my head a little bit on the ground when I landed. So, you know, I go back to the huddle like a normal play. You know, I didn't even realize the excitement from the crowd or the sideline. So the game ends, we win, and we get back to the team hotel. And one of my teammates were, maybe it was a fan, not sure if it was a teammate, probably a fan. And this is when YouTube was just like coming along, right? So it's like, hey, man, did you see your hit? And I couldn't remember having a big hit in the game. And I'm like, what hit are you talking about? So he's like, oh, man, you got to see this. So he pulls me to the lobby computer that in the lobby, pulls up YouTube, and it's already on there. And I'm watching it like, you know, I'm watching the live game, so it's coming. I'm like, okay. Wow. I'm like, oh. I'm like, when was that? So, you know, the crazy thing about that hit, man, I didn't even realize that till I got to the hotel lobby after the game, which is wild. But yeah, man, definitely top one or two hits of my career.
Yeah, I think ironically, Zach Robinson probably doesn't remember it either.
Oh yeah. Next day though, I guarantee that.
TJ, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. We really appreciate you joining us. Your trip from high school, from growing up to Eugene, is well documented. A lot of people are well aware of the path you took to Eugene. But for anybody who might not be, before we get into a little bit more about your Oregon career, tell people a little bit about your high school life and then coming to Eugene, becoming an Oregon Duck, and that process.
Okay, so junior year, I'm playing corner. I'm a backup corner in high school, De La Salle High School. And, you know, we were a perennial powerhouse at the time. You know, we had a winning streak of – it ended at 151, so the last game of my senior year. So at this point, we're probably around 140 or something like that. And, you know, I got no burn my junior year at all. I was a little undersized. We had, you know, two pretty good corners, all-state corners. And, you know, I just, you know, played behind them. So my senior year was actually, you know, supposed to be my breakout season, the season that I had planned to earn a scholarship and, you know, start on defense for us. And which, you know, I ended up starting at the safety position instead of corner. And first two games of the season went great for me. I had an interception in each game. So third game, I'm coming into, you know, like, wanting to continue the streak. You know, I'm looking towards three picks in three games. And we're playing St. Francis High School from San Jose area. And I'm playing center field, middle of the field. I break on. Quarterback rolls out towards the sideline, you know, scrambling, looking to throw the ball. So my eyes are on him. I'm reading him the whole time. He throws the ball in the air, kind of down the hash. So I break on the ball trying to, you know, get the pick. And, you know, I was in the trajectory to make an interception, but the receiver, for some reason, didn't see the ball thrown, or I don't know what happened, but he kept running straight down the field and ran straight into me because my eye was in the sky on the ball, and ended up knocking knees, and I fractured my patella. I'm not exactly what it's called, but it's right where the patella tendon is, like your lower knee, upper shin area. It's a bone, so I cracked that bone, fractured it, and missed the complete, my complete rest of my senior year, which was devastating for me because, like I said, all my eggs were in one basket for my senior year. And, I rehabbed all, season and off season. And that year we had one of the probably best recruiting classes a high school could have, right? We had four other guys commit to the University of Oregon. Cameron Colvin, he was the number one receiver in the country. Jackie Bates, Willie Glasper, and the late Terrence Kelly, rest in peace. So those were my four best friends who had all committed, to Oregon. Coach Aliotti, our D coordinator at the time, his brother was a dean of students at De La Salle. So we had a little line from De La Salle to Oregon. Demetrius Williams, a receiver, he was older than us, had went to Oregon a little bit before. Also, Charles Favroth played corner at De La Salle, ended up playing at Oregon as well. So it was a little pipeline that we had. So I took the opportunity and asked them, could I get healthy and come on and walk on as a preferred walk on and hopefully earn a scholarship at some point. And they allowed me to do that, which was a blessing. Coach Bilotti was the head coach. And when I graduated from high school, I was still hurt a little bit. So I took that year off. I didn't go straight to Oregon. I ended up taking some JC classes and wanted to make sure I was healthy before I stepped back on that football field. So this was going into – we graduated 04. This was going into the 2005 year. And camps come in. We get in all the new freshmen come in. I come in with the new freshmen. I think Willie Glasper had ended up gray shirting as well for whatever reason. So he was coming in as a freshman. We had Walter Thurman, Jairus Byrd, to name a couple guys that I ended up playing my college career, most of my college career aside. And I was at corner. I was back at corner at this point, and my whole objective was, to be better than all the scholarship guys they were bringing in, which was Walt. Jairus was playing safety freshman year. And it's funny because I think after sophomore year, me and Jairus switched positions. He went to corner, and then I went to safety. But that fall camp went very well. I was actually in the running to play as a true freshman, as a walk-on, because I was playing so well in camp. And I ended up tweaking my knee, minor tweak, nothing major. But it was enough where I couldn't get the reps I needed to be able to play as a true freshman at the end of camp. So they decided to redshirt me, which was fine. So spring ball comes. I still don't have a scholarship yet. The following spring ball comes, and now I'm like, I need to hurry up and get a scholarship because, man, these loans at the end of school is going to be a hefty ticket. So I had a very good spring game, and I was starting at corner by the end of that spring. So after that spring, that's when I was offered a scholarship. So at the time, me and Walt were competing for that corner job, I think, and Jackie Bates was on the other side already, and Pat Chung and Jay Bird were at the safety position at this point. So coming into the next season, I'm preparing to start. Me and Jack, we're high school buddies. We've been playing football together since we were 8, 9 years old. Like, we played on the same Pop Warner team when we were 10 or 11 years old. So it's like, man, this is dope. Me and my boy from the house starting corner. And maybe 2 weeks before the opener, I tore my meniscus. At the end of practice, it was non-contact. Nobody touched me. It was just – I was shuffling, and I broke on the ball, and I felt like a little it wasn't a pop. It's hard to describe. It was kind of just the aching, you know, like kind of like a stabbing pain. So I ended up getting an MRI, tore my meniscus, was out for a while. So yeah, that was, ended up not starting that year, obviously. And I think Walt starting that year as a redshirt freshman. And, you know, as my recovery proceeded, it was just a lot of stress on my knee to continue to play cornerback in practice. It was aching. I used to have to get, you know, like anywhere from 10 to 15 cc's of fluid drained out my knee every week because it would just continue to swell. And Coach Neal was our DB coach. He's like, well, let's try and take some stress off your knee. How do you feel about moving to safety? I was like, I'm on the same page as you because this is becoming too stressful on my knee. I played safety in high school anyway, and it ended up being a great decision for us, not only myself but the team, because for whatever reason, once he made that move, I think Jackie Bates had got kicked out of school at the point at that time, and they moved Jarris to corner. So that safety spot was pretty vacant. And I took it. Pat was already starting. So the next year ended up being Jay Bird and Walt at corner, and me and Pat at safety because Matt Harper had left school as well. He was the other starting safety before I started. So, yeah, that's pretty much the story how I got the starting position. And, you know, how I even got to that point.
Yeah, and especially with this year, you know, Oregon fans, you know, seeing this week Oregon signing another top class of ranked star guys on scholarship. What was it like for you to earn that scholarship as a walk-on, and how did that carry over into your professional career and even still today in your perseverance personally?
Yeah, it was a lot of hard work and perseverance, like you just said. It was points where I thought I wouldn't get back to myself, let alone play as long as I did or even get drafted as high as I did in the NFL, because, you know, my knee was just, it kept lingering my entire career. And I think my sophomore year, I was on the fringe. Jeff Mail had came in, and I don't think many people know this. Jeff Mail came in as a safety. Like, he wasn't a receiver. So he had came in. He was healthy, very athletic. You know, he was good on defense as well. So I was competing with him for that third safety spot. But I still wasn't healthy. I was playing with a Don Joy on. You know, I wasn't in a good space mentally. So I honestly was thinking about transferring at that point because I thought I should at minimum be the third safety, but it just wasn't playing out like that at the time. So Coach Oz was the special teams coach. He was like, T, why don't you come play kickoff and do some special teams for me? So that's why I tell these kids all the day, always, all the time, if you want to get on the field and you have the ability, man, get on those teams, and, you know, your ability will be seen. So I was on kickoff, and I was killing it, man. We scored a lot at the time, so we would kick off 4 to 6 times a game, 4, 6, 7 times a game, and I would leave the game with, like, 4 or 5 tackles only on kickoff. Like, it was crazy. People would come to me like, dude, and teams would have to, like, draw things up just to block me because – I was literally, my intent was to make every tackle on kickoff, every tackle. If I could, I'd try to make every tackle. So sometimes I'd make like 80% of the kickoff tackles. And it came to a point where even the other teams and coaches was like, dude, why aren't you playing defense? Like, no one can block you. You make your sure tackler. Like, there's no way you shouldn't be on defense. So, you know, at that time, you know, there was reasons that I couldn't explain to everybody, but. You know, so coming into my junior year is, you know, when I was my healthiest first. You know, I was my healthiest, and, you know, I had matured a little bit mentally, and I was just ready to start and take over. So, you know, playing alongside Pat Chung, which he had been a better safety in the Pac-10 since he came in as a freshman. I'm like, if I can outplay Pat, you know, he's my teammate, but there's always competition within. You know, positions, right? If you got two corners, one of them's trying to be the best corner on the team, no matter what. So it was the same situation for us. I was like, if I could play as good as Pat or better, then I'll be all right. So my junior year, I had a great year. I stayed healthy, played the entire season. And like you mentioned, we went to the Holiday Bowl that year. And Pat was a senior, so he was leaving. Jay Burr, he ended up leaving that year. I'm not sure if he had declared yet or not.
Yeah, yep.
He left as a junior. So I was just trying to, show out that game. It was my first, kind of big game. We had a great opponent, Oklahoma State, at that time. I think that year we both could have been, in the Rose Bowl or whatever the Big 12 goes to. Like, we were two very good teams. I think I'm not going to say we were better than the Holiday Bowl, because obviously we were there, but we could have beat any of the teams that were ranked ahead of us, without a doubt. And it was a barn burner for sure. It was a physical game. Both teams came out hitting, but at the end of the day, we out hit those guys. We were faster than those guys. And I just think we were just more aggressive and physical, and that's why we won.
Well, TJ, you mentioned that Holiday Bowl. It's the game Oregon's preparing to play in here right in between Christmas, New Year's. It'll be on December 28th, excuse me. Your team, you guys played in that Holiday Bowl. You just mentioned it. I would love to hear from you a little bit about the preparation process for that game, going into a game where you guys knew you would have Dez Bryant lined up across from you. You'd have a number of other NFL Pro Bowlers and highly drafted guys in that game. And then especially what was said at halftime in that locker room. You guys were down in that first half. I think it was about 17-7. Tough game in the first half. You guys come out and absolutely punch him in the mouth in the second half. What was that preparation? Then what was that halftime locker room like?
Yeah, like you said, they had a squad. They had Hunter at running back, Pettigrew at tight end, Dez Bryant, Zach Robinson. They were all highly ranked, touted, college players. And future draft picks. So I forgot they had another old lineman, I think. I can't remember who it was, but they were pretty stacked. They were pretty stacked. So I don't remember it's so long ago. I didn't know what the score was at halftime. I didn't even know we were down, honestly. But going to San Diego, you practice a little bit at Oregon, then you travel, and then you're there for a week. And it was all business for us because we knew we had lost can't remember what game during the season that we shouldn't have won. That we shouldn't have lost. So we thought we should have been, in the Rose Bowl that year, or at least the Fiesta Bowl, because how the BCS was at that time. But they put us in the Holiday Bowl, but we knew we had a great opponent. And most importantly, when you're playing those interconference games, you want to put on for your conference, right? We wanted to put on for the Pac-10 and let it be known the brand of football, and this is one of the best conferences in the country. And we had a good opponent, but we knew it was going to be a difficult task, especially with controlling Dez Bryant at the time, because he was an animal that year. He was killing everybody. Zach Robinson, they were running a similar offense to us, they were having a lot of success that season, especially offensively. So defensively, we knew it was going to be a challenge for us. So it was all business, man. We didn't go down there like the year before. I think we were in the Vegas Bowl or – no, we played in the Sun Bowl.
Sun Bowl, yep.
Destroy USF. But it was a little different because we knew – the USF game, we knew we were better than them. We knew that they couldn't beat us, and we was going to, run the ball with Jay Stu and D. Diggs, and – it was just they were outmatched. But this one, we knew it was going to be a little closer and a bigger challenge for us. So it was all business. So when we came into that game, we were poised. I was dialed in. I'm not going to lie. I was very dialed in and probably played one of my better games of my career. I had an interception, but it got called back because of Pat P.I. But overall, I was trying to get to every ball. Like, that was my mission. It's like, don't slow down at all this game. Just run. and keep running everything. That first drive that came out, went right down the field on us, and it kind of was like, oh, shit. We was on defense like, man, Dez had caught a couple balls, and you got to feel how strong he was when you tackled him. I'm like, oh, this dude's strong, man. Usually I can come up and just, you know, put my shoulder on somebody or, you know, give him a little something not needed, but I remember I hit him on the sideline and kind of rolled off down to his ankle and he was still up. And I'm like, what the hell? But I'm like, okay, I see how this is going to be. I'm going to have to bring it. I'm going to have to bring it to your ass every play. So rest of the game, I think we had went to the sideline like, hey, the only way we're going to win this game if we start hitting these dudes in the mouth. And from there on out, we just start tattooing guys. We just started tattooing guys. I was like, man, I don't care what happens. When we get them down or we get close to the ball, first man, you secure the ball and everybody else, come tattoo his ass. Like, hold him up. We're going to get our licks in. And that was kind of how it was. The first man to come in, make sure he secured the tackle, and then we just start dogpiling. So, Dez ended up getting hurt. I think the second quarter, he caught a slant. Jay Bird came and closed on him. Made a great tackle, hit him right in his hip. And I think his knee twisted or something. But it was a physicality that we needed, you know, at that time. And I'm sorry he got hurt. But, you know, that's what happens when you're playing physical defense. Guys get hurt.
Yeah, and going into your senior year, first year under Coach Chip Kelly, what's it like when you go into a season expected to be, you know, that physical, nonverbal leader of the team, senior leader, and then going into your first game, having an injury like you had that kept you out half the season, and then, you know, a couple weeks later, we lose Walt, so essentially, you know, half the D-boy group that we were relying on is out there getting coached up by you guys instead. What's it like to transition to more of that vocal leader role, and how do you balance that with still rehabbing and trying to get yourself back on the field?
Man, it sucked. I'm not going to lie, man. Me and Walt, we came back so we could have, you know, we talked to each other. We thought about leaving, but we both had, you know, the intentions and the possibility of going first round if we came back. So, you know, we was like, we're going to come back. We're going to ball together senior year. Pat and Jay Bird's gone, but, you know, we're going to lead the Talmadge and I think it was – Javis Lewis,
yeah.
And I don't think Boyette was there yet. Maybe.
Oh, yeah, Boyette was there, yep.
So we was like, we're just going to lead this group, and we're going to, you know, let them know how this D-boy defense plays. So when I got hurt against Boise in the second half, I was coming off, like, a tremendous first half. I had, like, 11 tackles in the first half, a pass breakup, maybe a quarterback rush or a tackle for loss or something, quarterback hurry, so – that's exactly how I wanted to start. You know, my first game, it was national TV against Boise, which was a rivalry at the time. They had just beat us the year before at home. So we really owed them one, especially on that blue turf. So we came out and we were hyped. We were definitely hyped. First half, I don't know what the score was, but I think we may have been winning. But the year before, they had knocked Jeremiah Masoli out the game on a cheap shot. And no penalty was called, no nothing. So we definitely owed them an ass kicking. I think that's what LeGarrette said in the paper.
Yeah.
Game, but, you know, it was like we owed them one, man. And, you know, we were definitely dishing it out the first half. But, you know, the first drive of the second – of the third quarter, they moving down the ball. They end up getting on the goal line. And I'm trying to stop a goal line run. I'm in the pile. And I don't know if somebody stepped on my foot or my heel or fell on my ankle, but I just felt my ankle. It felt like it snapped in two, I'm not going to lie. And I was done. Ended up being a high ankle sprain. So to watch the second half and how we just kind of – at least defensively, you could tell, like, just me not being out there. There was no – you know, we had some young guys, and it just was falling apart on the back end. So that was hard to watch. And, you know – yeah, it was just a tough loss for us. It was a tough loss for us. But we ended up bouncing back, man. Made to the Rose Bowl, which was crazy. That whole season was crazy. So I just – and then when Walt got hurt, third game against Cal, and Think we lost that game? Did we lose that game?
No, we came out and beat them 43-3, but it didn't look so good after Walt got hurt on kick return.
Yeah, man, that was devastating for me to see because, you know, that's my dog, and I was hoping, you know, when I came back, he'd be healthy, and I knew we was going to need him for the rest of the year, and that just sucked to see him go down. And then Willie got hurt in practice towards ACL, so it was like all the seniors was hurt. Our entire senior secondary was hurt, which sucked because, you know, the young guys had to play. And, you know, they played decent. They played pretty well, man. Boyette played, came in, played well. Javis came in and played well. But it would have been different with us, completely different. Like, we were shut down at that point. Like, Willie was playing great. He was starting. And when he got hurt in practice, and we had so much. Javis had moved the corner for a little bit, and Talmadge had to step up and be the number one corner. And so it was a whole debauchery. That's why we lost to Stanford, just because we just didn't have that core that we needed. And yeah, that was the game that we shouldn't have lost right there, the Stanford game at Stanford, because we were way better than them. But, you know, it happens. Football, it's injuries.
Well, TJ, speaking of football, you're very familiar yourself. The NFL career, it speaks for itself. It's outstanding. Pair of Pro Bowl appearances, time with the Browns, Broncos, Buccaneers, Cardinals. Whether it's that Super Bowl, guys like Peyton Manning or guys like Von Miller, what is it you take away from your NFL career? What are like one or two of those memories that will always stay with you?
First, just being drafted, you know, a blessing to be drafted second round after missing, you know, half my senior year to still go that high. Just let me know that I could have went first round, right? So it was a not disappointing, but it was like, okay, I didn't go first round. I missed half my senior year, and I still went second round. So that told me, like, I was first round caliber player. So that was my mindset going into camp and everything. Like, even though Joe Hayden, when I got to Cleveland, he was picked number 5 overall. He was a first round pick, but, you know, I felt like I was a first round pick too. So it was like we had 2 first round picks. So I'm coming into this camp with expectations to be a first round type of player. And I think I did that. My rookie year, it was great. I made all rookie team. I was close to making a Pro Bowl as a rookie. So that was definitely one of my better memories. And, of course, you know, winning a Super Bowl with Denver. And that team we had with so many great players probably would be the number one memory for sure of my pro career. The Pro Bowls is great. Don't get me wrong. All pro my last year in Cleveland. But that Super Bowl is like nothing else, man. Because we didn't win a championship in college. We won a Pac 10, but it wasn't like the championship games. It was just like, okay, whoever had the best record was Pac 12, Pac 10 champion. So that Super Bowl, man, is amazing.
So on the topic of Super Bowls, I got 2 questions related around that. Have the D boys compared Super Bowl rings, and who has the best? And what's that first conversation with Coach John Neal like after you win the Super Bowl?
Ooh. Well, we haven't compared rings. We definitely talk about it. Pat has the most, though. I think Pat has one. I have one. Jay Bird doesn't have one. But I think he made the most money, so that's all right. Most money, so I think he'll be okay with that. But after I won the Super Bowl, the first time I talked to Coach Neal, we came up there for the spring game. And, you know, we just talked about my road to, you know, being a Super Bowl champ, which was crazy. And then, you know, between Chief and Miss Kim doing all my rehab throughout the years at Oregon, like, dude, we don't know how you playing this long, because we didn't think your knee was going to hold up at all. I'm like, either. But yeah, just reminiscing on my journey from walk-on to scholarship to, you know, getting drafted, because I didn't make all Pac-10 neither years, which was kind of crazy to me, but who cares? But so yeah, Coach Neal, we chopped it up and talked about, you know, going from special teams to, you know, starting that corner to not starting because of my injury to moving to safety. And I think that was what we talked about most was like, you know, that was the best decision we made together was to move you at safety. I remember like it was yesterday, we were doing one-on-ones and we were practicing in Austin at this time. And this was before they took the curve out. So we were doing one-on-ones and I had always been great with my press and my one-on-ones, but at this point, I just couldn't transition and get out of my brace as fast as I used to. So somebody called an out on me or some shit I would usually pick off. And Coach Neil brings me to the side. He's like, how do you feel about moving to safety? I'm like, shit, I thought you would never ask. I'm like, get me off this corner, coach. I cannot do this no more. It's like my knee is swelling up after every practice. I just need like less stress. And I'm a physical player by nature. So now I'm like, I played in high school, passed the strong safety. I'd love to play free safety, like, cause I could still go get the ball and do, you know, kind of the less physical work, right? I don't have to be down there taking on blocks and more weight bearing on my knee with other guys, you know, trying to do all that stuff down low. So you know, it was a great transition, and it worked. It turned out perfect.
Well, TJ, it's the last one I've got for you. We've held you for a long time. I really appreciate you staying with us and being willing to talk as much as you have. I think something that a lot of Oregon fans have seen, especially this past season, but over the last few seasons, the Pac-12 refs have really enjoyed throwing the flag for those targeting calls. We've seen a lot of them recently. I would love to hear your opinion, just how it's been ruled in general. And also, do you think you would have picked up some of those flags back in the day?
Yeah, I think it's being ruled not well at all. There's sometimes I don't even think they're seeing the hit before they throw the flag. It's like, did you see it or are you throwing it just because it was violent? Like, just because it's violent doesn't mean it's targeting. And the worst part about it is, I don't think nobody should be ejected for that. Like, they don't even do that in the NFL. So why would we, you know, go backwards and eject these college players for playing football? At the end of the day, okay, you make a mistake, it's football. Throw the penalty and continue on with the game. But to penalize these guys by ejecting them, not only personally, but the team, you know, because a lot of these games, these teams are losing some of their key players. And it just – it throws the game off so badly that, you know, it makes it hard to watch. But it's football. I understand, like, the mentality of trying to keep it safe in ways that it has become safer, like teaching the correct way. But things are going to happen. Things are going to happen in the game. And I don't think it's warranted for a guy to be ejected. Yeah. And I definitely would have been ejected a bunch of times. To answer your question, would have been ejected for the Zach Robertson hit. For example. Oh,
definitely.
You know, I came in, I hit him right under his chin. And that is football. Like, you turn the ball up the alleyway, it's gonna be some repercussions to that. So you know, just keep going east west and run out of bounds if you're smart. But like, even to this day, I watch football and I see guys that, you know, you make that turn, you know how that alley is. And it's like, oh, what's going to happen? Because you really can't see the whole field on TV. But, you know, at some point, you know, a safety should be filling that alley. Should be. And when I don't see a safety fill that alley, I get disappointed a little bit. But, you know, it's making players think too much about stopping someone, right? You have to think too much about how you're going to stop a ball carrier. And that's not fair.
Well, and in your case, man, I've seen the tape. You would have gotten a targeting on taking on some offensive linemen a couple times, myself included, man. So I got one last question before we let you go. It's one Sam usually likes to ask, but I got to steal it. But since we're Oregon, got to ask you as a former player, what is your favorite Oregon uniform of all time?
Oh, man. My favorite Oregon uniform is the throwbacks. The green with the old school yellow and the Donald Duck on the side with the O. That's definitely my favorite, man. Those are like the first Rose Bowl team, I believe, or maybe. But yeah, green jerseys, yellow pants, yellow helmets with the stripe down the middle, for sure. Those or I love the national championship uniforms. With the year after I graduated, with the lime green and I don't know what the helmet was, but those were fire.
Yeah, the chrome introduction. Yeah, that was awesome.
No, it wasn't chrome. It was
the carbon fiber.
Carbon fiber. That's what it is. Yep.
Yeah, the carbon fibers were dope. Those were dope. When I pulled up to the stadium, I'm like, man, those are clean for sure.
Well, thank you for coming on with us, TJ. I hope you're doing well, and hope to see you at Autzen here pretty soon, sometime next season.
Yeah, you'll probably catch me at the Holiday Bowl. I'm in L.A., so I think I'm going to drive down and, you know, hopefully be on the sideline. If not, I'll be in the stands.
Hey, wherever you see him, Ducks fans, let him know. He's an all-time great Duck, and as always, once a Duck, always a Duck. Thanks for coming on, TJ.
Go Ducks, baby.
Go Ducks. Well, I'm really glad we got TJ on finally. I know we had been talking about it for a while, but one thing I want to express is TJ was just such a huge leader for that 2009 team. And myself especially, for those that don't remember, the old Oregon locker rooms had kind of two tiers, and the freshmen and newcomers stayed up top. Meanwhile, at the bottom were, you know, your veteran guys, a lot of guys getting the most play times. And when I first got bumped down that 2009 season when Coach Kelly took over, my locker was right there next to TJ's. And I might have been the only offensive guy on our little block there. But I know just watching TJ that season, competing with him daily in that fall camp, I still remember some of the days we'd come in and the offense and defense would just be so uptight, so mad at each other. But there was just this level of intensity that he brought up everybody around him. And that's something that to this day, I always still think about because it's the exact same thing he did at that Holiday Bowl. As soon as he hit Zach Robinson, you could see all us redshirt guys that aren't suited up on the sidelines jumping up and down. And it just fed our team's energy. And he's that kind of guy. I love TJ for it. And I hope you guys enjoyed that interview as much as I enjoyed getting to ask him those questions.
Man, it was too nice of TJ to stick around with us for as long as he did. I appreciated the level of insight he gave with every single answer. He's a guy that, again, we have genuinely since the start of this podcast said TJ Ward's a guy we should get on here. The fact that he came on and joined us, it's always awesome. Appreciated hearing from him. Appreciated hearing a little bit more about this Holiday Bowl because, man, I am excited for this game. I'm excited to go to this game. I'm excited for everybody's going to watch this game on Fox. Going to get a little Gus Johnson action on an Oregon football game. Nice to see that without it having to start at 9 a.m. at a Big Ten school. So very much looking forward to this ball game. Nick, I would love to hear a little bit about how you see this ball game going. North Carolina, they've got an explosive team, some explosive players. We're going to be curious to see if they play, though.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, you know, a definitive answer. Not only is Bo Nix coming back next season, he'll be playing in this bowl game. Meanwhile, on the other side, there's some talk out there this week that the quarterback, Drake May from UNC, might have a couple $5 million offers out there to go somewhere else. Not sure how that might translate in the bowl game, but if he does play, if he doesn't, I still expect this to be a formidable offense, especially going against what we've seen from our defense this season. Now, you have enough bowl time that you could make some significant implementations and changes, but is it realistic with all the recruiting coaches have to do in this time period right now to go out and implement an entirely new defense or put people in different positions? Not realistically, and even then, those are going to have your sacrifices. Those are going to have their weaknesses that are exploited on the field by the other team. If you do put someone out of position or you try to change things and you can get your own team confused. But during this bowl preparation, I'm really excited to see how much we don't, not just focusing on UNC themselves, but how much do we go back and look at the last couple games of the season and say, hey, what can we fix if we have about a month of time to get healthy? And I think we can address a lot of things right then and there, because I think defensively we've seen that, you know, albeit whether it's, you know, losing guys to things like targeting penalties or injuries, the availability of all the guys on our defense has been limited at times this season. And that's the thing that excites me most about, you know, bowl games. Now, is it a little frustrating having this big gap between your last game and your bowl game? A little bit, especially now with early national signing day. It feels a bit more like this isn't, you know, an early season exhibition for the 2023 season instead of a way to culminate your 2022 season. But, you know, I think it, as the playoffs do expand in the future, that will kind of help that kind of gap move along a little bit. But what you have is this time right now where the players really have to focus on themselves and their internal development for that to show on the field. And I think we saw in the Oregon State Las Vegas Bowl how much that team just kind of stuck it together, pulled in, and they took the bowl game much more seriously than their opponent. And as a result, they nearly had a shutout. So that's going to be very important going into this UNC game. And I know to us on this show, even more important than that, Sam, are we both going to go with home colors? Because I know that's what everybody in the nation wants to see. Some Oregon green and yellow against that North Carolina blue. Everyone wants to see it.
I mean, I think it should happen. I really do. I think that even if Oregon decides to go with a white jersey, can we at least make the helmet, pants, socks? Like, come on, let's play with it a little bit. Let's see what we can do out there. Against the powder blue and the navy and the silver, like, there's so much you could do. It would look so good. Basically anything Oregon did would look so good paired against that blue. But that's not the point that I should be making, but it's the point that you've got me making, Nick, which is why this podcast is always very interesting. What I'll say, though, and what I think is going to be very important in this ball game is, A, obviously we've mentioned it, May's availability. Earlier today, I texted a friend of mine who works for TV station out in North Carolina. I'd asked them, I said, hey, what's the news we know on May? I'm still waiting for a concrete update on that question. We'll see what we can get out of that. But truthfully, I think that this North Carolina team is going to be two different teams depending on if a guy like that plays. Obviously, Mac Brown, Hall of Fame head coach, legendary head coach, one of the most brilliant football minds of the last 30 to 40 years. We know that. But May is an NFL caliber quarterback. Whether or not they have him is going to be huge. And I think that if you're an Oregon fan, the players on your own team you should be looking at a lot are going to be the young corners and the young secondary. I think especially guys like Manning and Florence will have a huge opportunity to be able to shine in this ball game. They're going to have to be worried about a guy in Josh Downs, 94 receptions, 1,029 yards, 11 touchdowns. He's averaging 10.9 yards per grab. He's having a really, really strong season for North Carolina. Also, the other aspect of whether May's playing or not that's big, he's their leading rusher on the season. 172 attempts for 653 yards for Drake May. He's only averaging 3.8 yards per rush, which might not sound like a lot, but everybody who's carried the ball for this year for North Carolina, it's the fewest. He's somebody who, running the ball, you got to be aware of. He also has 7 touchdowns rushing this season, more than capable of doing that. I think for Oregon's defense, it's going to be very interesting to see who plays, who doesn't. I think it'll also be exciting to see who can step up among that younger group.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mac Brown, so something I think we should definitely mention in his legendary coaching career. He ended his Texas career losing to the Oregon Ducks in the Alamo Bowl, Coach Aliotti's final game. And then, you know, we've talked about this game with Joey Harrington once or twice, but the 2000 Holiday Bowl, Coach Mac Brown lost to our Oregon Ducks there. So you got to imagine he's coming into this game with a couple war stories. He could probably tell his team to try and get a revenge game out of this, but I can't say that I think it's going to happen. I think there is, at least from what I've seen in terms of this season and even in the bowl season, there is a little bit of the Pac-12 toughness kind of showing off. Now, Wazoo game aside, I think that the level of, you know, how close and competitive this conference has been this season has, at the end of the season, ultimately made a lot of these teams better, whereas we're seeing other conferences, Florida, for a great example, is losing so many players and enduring so much turnover during this time that they really can't even put an effective product on the field. So to see what kind of where UNC ends up on that spectrum and what kind of you know, team that they've developed this season under their level of opponents, I'm very interested to see, because, you know, seeing it on the television is a lot different than when you see the matchup on person and see different teams in different conferences. So after especially the grind that our team had to overcome in November with especially after the Bo Nix injury and just how we had to try and grind it out, I'm excited to see exactly what we're going to do, especially on the ground against UNC.
Well, I think on the ground is one place where I almost feel a little bit confident knowing that the guys who primarily contributed will be contributing. I don't know of any of Oregon's offensive linemen that are supposed to be sitting out of this game. I haven't heard anybody of the linemen say they are planning to sit out of this game. So you don't necessarily have to worry about that looking incredibly different. And you still have Whittington and Irving who are going to be running the ball. Fair amount of James as well. You could see probably a couple other guys in there as well if something were to get out of hand like we have throughout the season. Having those three guys in there will be, I assume, as much as an Oregon fan could want, at least for this moment right now, given the circumstance. Think on the ground, that'll be Oregon's best chance for success, as it has been all season long. But I don't think they'd be incapable of getting some stuff done through the air as well. Would love to see a guy like Coda have a big last game in an Oregon uniform. Haven't heard that he won't be playing. Obviously, Troy Franklin will be leading that group. But could also be a big opportunity for the tight ends, especially any younger guys who might be trying to get a little bit more playing time now that a guy like Montevideo out into the transfer portal. So I'm excited to see what the Ducks will be doing in offense as a whole in this ball game.
Yeah, it would be great to see, kind of a reemergence of Ferguson there, kind of slowing down at the end of the season with his production. So maybe, the transition of Montevideo to UCLA might, get him and Herbert some more touches. Who knows? I'm excited to see. We utilized them so well in the first half of the season, and then that kind of tailed off towards the end of the season there and in November. So excited to see how we work those guys out. And then defensively, especially in terms of generating edge pressure, DJ Johnson out of this game, somebody's going to have to step up. I know, Swinson transferring out, Buckner transferring out. There's kind of a gap there, but somebody is going to be able to step up, going to get some opportunities in this game to get some pressure on the quarterback, whoever it may be. And that's going to be
a big really Mace Funa game. I don't know why I'm feeling that, but this feels like, it feels like the guy who could step up in that spot.
Ooh, damn, Sam. Well, you're already leading into prediction time here. I like that one. Mace Funa, definitely. I would love to hear his name called. Maybe another pick six in a crucial moment to seal the game. That would be pretty fun. But overall, I know I don't know as much about UNC as I would like to make this prediction, but I feel confident enough in saying that this Oregon offense, especially if Bo Nix is healthy and able to run the football, will put up around 40 points. And I imagine our defense will improve significantly in the time that they've had to prepare for this game and get healthy. So I'm looking at this game right now, Sam, as the Holiday Bowl, December 28th. I see it being 42 Oregon, 35 UNC.
Well, you know, Nick, that is a very, very good guess, because North Carolina has scored on average 35 points a game this season. So I don't think that's a bad guess at all. But considering what I feel like I know about the Oregon defense, going to give them a little more than that, I will say. But I do think, in fact, Oregon's going to win this game. I think that the spread is a little bit wide for this one, honestly. I don't think that Oregon's able to win by the more than 14 points that it says here. But I will say this Oregon offense, they reliably score in the 40s. If they're winning a game, they're in the 40s. We know that. Final score, Oregon Ducks 41, North Carolina 38. I think it's going to be a really, really fun ball game. I think it'll be very up and down the field. I don't think either defense is going to do a whole lot of stopping anybody. And I think that a well-timed field goal, either late or maybe right going into a half, could end up being the difference.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense, but who knows with these bowl games? Another thing you need to keep in mind is just with the timing, with Christmas this weekend, the team going down to San Diego during that. I remember that being one of the major downsides of the Holiday Bowl. You get a little time before the actual holidays to go home, but then right on, I think Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, we had to fly down to the bowl site. So That can obviously lead to some preparation issues, and at least we don't have to fly across the country like UNC. So take that, factor it in. But I'm excited. I know. I hope everybody has a great holiday weekend, and gets to enjoy themselves, relax, take some time off, and then regroup here in a couple days for that Holiday Bowl. And honestly, excited to see what happens with the college football playoff. While we've kind of flirted with being in there the past couple seasons, I think this this year they got it right. And you can't always say that. And sometimes you have your concerns, but getting to see TCU and Michigan in there, and then, you know, Georgia. And I'm very curious to see, especially after us beating Ohio State last year, how Ohio State can match up right there in Atlanta, a place we're very familiar with, and see how they match up with Georgia, having about a month of preparation time again. So excited to see if their outcome is a little bit different than ours. But overall, you know, an up and down season, a lot of ups for Oregon fans, and we're glad you were here with us. And if you guys want to see a wrap-up show after the bowl game, before we take our little off-season break, let us know. Let us know who you want to interview down in the comments or on Twitter. And just thank you guys for joining us this season. We hope you come back and go back and watch our previous episodes too in the offseason. And as always, once a duck, always a duck. Go Ducks, baby.